Well, hello everyone, and welcome to our first coaching call here, the B2B Business Launcher 2.0 program here on April 14th, 2016. It's great to be here. I'm glad you guys are here, and I'm excited to connect with you here in this format. This will be the first of six calls we'll have during our work together over the next 4 months. And before we get to, I just got to tell you this. I brew a cup of coffee right after lunch every day, and my house smells like a cafe. It smells like a Starbucks in here. It's just awesome. So I just have to tell you that. I just walked back into the hallway, and it just smells amazing in here. Nothing, if you're a coffee lover, there's nothing like making your house smell like a Starbucks. Okay, so a few housekeeping items, and I know many of you are still joining in. The first is everyone is on mute. I found that it's best to do it this way. There's a lot of people on the call, and with background noise and people typing while they take notes and all that, it just gets to be too much. It's very disruptive if we try it that way. I've tried it that way even with as few as five or six people in other coaching programs, and it just doesn't work. So once you get beyond two people, it's best to keep everyone on mute. Now, and I'll just remind you of this throughout, but if you have a question and you're on the phone, just hit *2 on your telephone keypad, and that will raise your hand. I have a dashboard here. I'll see at least your number and city, sometimes even your name, and I'll just unmute you, and you can ask away. And then when we're done, I'll put you back on mute and so forth. So *2, just keep that in mind, and again, I'll remind you of that. If you're on the webcast, so the webcast is where you're listening through your computer speakers, you're not dialing through a phone, then you just type in your question there in the field and hit submit. So it's pretty straightforward. Now, having said that, it's best if you can dial in, and I think all of you guys right now, which is good, all of you guys are dialed in through some sort of phone or Skype, which is really the best way because we can have a conversation that way. If you're in the webcast, the only way you can ask questions is by typing it, which is fine. I can read it, but then if there's follow-up questions, there's about a 20-second delay, audio delay on the webcast. So it becomes just difficult to have dialogue that way. Now, sometimes you'll be somewhere where that's maybe your only option. That's totally fine, and I don't make fun of people who are on the webcast or anything like that. But I just want to let you know, for your benefit, it's best if you can dial in through the phone. Now, if you can't attend one of these calls in the future, you can still pre-submit questions. And what you want to do is just go in, log into the dashboard, click on the call that's about to happen that day or the day after, and you should be able to, there'll be a field there where you can ask questions, submit questions. You can go ahead in any time, I believe as early as the day before, but at the latest, I think the morning of the call, and just type in your question, and I'll see it later when we do have the call. It just kind of keeps a record of those. So that is the best, most practical way to submit a question if you're not going to be here to ask it live. I'll answer the question. Within 24 hours, everyone will have access to the replay of these calls. So you'll be able to just listen in at your convenience and listen to my answer to your question and to others' questions. In terms of where that is, Crystal will send you emails. It's very easy. All the calls will be organized in the student portal. So you'll have access to those forever, and it's very easy to get to that, to get to those questions. Let me see. What else? I think that's pretty much it. It's pretty much open mic here, so I don't have any material for you during these calls. It's just an opportunity for you to ask questions. Oh, one more thing. In terms of questions, you can ask anything. So let's say that right now you've got a hot prospect, but we haven't really started talking about, how to talk to the prospect, how to handle that first conversation, but you need some advice there on pricing or whatever. Feel free. These calls are not about the material we just covered necessarily. It could be about anything that's going on that you need some help or advice with or on. I'm happy to help. I'm here for you. If you want to talk through something, bounce an idea off of me, ask a direct question, anything like that, I am at your disposal. And we'll just go until we're done. Typically, I try to keep these no longer than 2 hours because they just get kind of crazy, especially on the replay. And I want to be respectful of your time as well. But what tends to happen is the first couple of calls tend to be really busy, and then it drops off a little bit. So, but we'll kind of, if we're still going, we'll try to kind of wrap it up here in, within 2 hours so that you guys can go about your day. All right, so with that, again, if you have a question, star 2 on your telephone keypad. We'll raise your hand, and it keeps a queue. So you can do that anytime, and you know, you're not going to lose your spot. And the first question is from Sharon. Sharon out in Florida. Hey, Sharon, how are you?
Hey, Ed. I'm doing really great, and thanks so much for all your information and support. And you answered an important call for me on the Academy call, which was really helpful. I was having trouble trying to find a direct link to listen on the computer where I didn't for any of the Academy stuff, but since you said it's better to dial in, I had already dialed in.
That's the best.
Okay, great, because I actually have to leave a little early, and I'll just take my cell phone with me and switch over to that. My question is about subcontracting, and I guess what's reasonable pricing for the primary contractor. I have an arrangement where I write LinkedIn profiles, and I actually wrote about this on the Academy forum, I think. I do about 3 hours of work interviewing the person, the executive, and I do no more than 300 words, and I get $250 flat fee. Sometimes the longest it's ever taken me with a problem person is about 4 hours, but it's usually between 2.5 to 3 hours, which I feel is decent enough, even though the primary person is charging about $1,200 for the full service, which means from beginning to end, she totally redoes the LinkedIn profile, and that's the only thing that she does. I mean, that's her total business. And she's also referring to me other leads whenever she gets them. So far, nothing's panned out, but I think she's going to put together a 12-month newsletter writing project from one of the people who's LinkedIn. I just do the summary, headline, and keywords for the profile.
Okay.
And I think I'm going to get a contract with one of them. So my question is, pricing in general, am I off target to get less than a dollar a word? I feel like it's decent. And what's reasonable for a 12-month newsletter contract where it's only going to be about 400 words for the main piece?
So, yeah, so you're talking about newsletter articles then,
right.
Or for the whole newsletter, right, which is mainly, I'm assuming, one article?
It'll be really a case study. This is a very complicated lawyer who does only catastrophic cases with insurance companies, and really his newsletter will focus on case studies, going to case managers and his target. So it'll be doing about a 400-word case study.
400-word case study, so it's recurring. Is it monthly, you said?
It'll be monthly, and she wants me to do it for 400. She said, oh, he's complaining he doesn't have any money. Can you do it for $400? I don't think it's going to take you all that long because I already know his business.
Okay, and any interviews, what kind of work is involved beyond the writing
I will probably be recording him, and he'll be talking about his case. So I'll definitely – he'll provide me whatever written material he has, but I'll definitely be writing from interviewing him and listening to him talk about his case.
So,
moving from PR mainly, PR and email marketing, and but I have a long background doing case studies.
Great. Okay. I think this is good. Here's how – look, every answer needs to have context. So here's the context for this particular response. You guys are trying to either transition or build or starting to really kind of grow something that's been stagnant. Like everyone's kind of in a different place, but all of you are in one of those categories. And when you're there – It's not about optimizing your pricing. It's about getting momentum. It's almost like you say yes to almost everything.
Right.
And you should say yes to almost everything because it's not about perfection. You're just trying to get that momentum. So, you know, is it on a little bit on the lower side? Well, it depends. I mean, for somebody who's established, yes. But if you're in these categories, I think it's great. I would
good.
Take it. It's recurring work, and I know a little bit about you. I remember, you know, what you shared with me when you were going when you were looking at the program. Take it. It's you know, this could lead into other things. You'll learn a lot. You'll have a client you can now leverage and look for similar others, charging maybe a little bit more. You got little to lose here, I think, and. You know, I think it's a great start, and eventually, you know, you'll be able to get a little bit more. But I think this is, yeah, I would take it.
This woman wants to refer anything that's writing to me, but she'll take, of course, a good size markup, and she's doing all the negotiation. I just have told her that sounded like a good price. Let me think about it for a few days. Anyway, great.
This is.
Thank you.
I think it's great. Take it. And, you know, here's the thing. Like, if they end up, and I don't think it's going to be this, but if they end up being a nightmare, you know, you can always let them go.
Yeah, I've already worked with him, and he was a dream client. His material is tough and hard to understand because it is so complicated, but it's medical. But I have the scientific background from years with environment and energy, so it wasn't a problem for me. He liked what I gave him.
How long do you think the interview will be, if you were to guess?
I would think it'd be no more than 45 minutes or so at the most, because he's very respectful of his time. He's super busy, and I think probably 45 minutes, maybe an hour.
Okay. So a couple of thoughts in terms of this is going to be about how can you make it as efficient as possible as you – keep in mind, the first couple of months, as you're finding your way through the process, it's going to be a little bit inefficient, but you're going to get better and better and better, which means you keep your fee the same, but you're able to do it in, let's say, 30% less time, so your internal hourly rate goes up, right? I would consider you want to be as prepared as possible for the interview. You want to lead the interview, even if he's a good interviewee, and by that I mean – the way I do case study interviews is I kind of have my questions in the order that I'm going to write the story. So the first question or two is about the background. Okay, who is the person or the company or whatever that we're talking about? What was the problem? So I move into problem. What did they do to find a solution? Tell me about that. So questions about that. And then, okay, what was the result? I got result questions. And ask them in that order. And what you want to do is you want to keep the interviewee kind of on track because it's very common for them to kind of bounce back and forth. Okay, so what happens is we're able to get them the settlement. It's like, okay, that's results questions, right? So don't interrupt them necessarily, but say, okay, let me kind of take you back to – let's go back to the problem here. Let's go back to the case or the accident or whatever it was. So keep them on track, number one. And you just have to find your way through that. Number two, I would seriously consider, even at first, it's going to cost you a couple of bucks, I would consider getting the interviews transcribed. It's going to save you a ton of time. This is where you can really waste a lot of time. I used to kind of do my own. And listening to a 45-minute interview, trying to take notes, is just drudgery. So record it. Send it to a transcriptionist. That does a couple of things. Now you don't have to worry about taking everything down. You're more relaxed. You're able to take notes on kind of the big points, and you're able to think about what he's saying and ask really good follow-up questions.
Okay, great.
And transcriptionist?
Yeah. I actually do some personal histories and have some referrals to transcriptionists, although I have not used them. From the folks in the Association of Personal Historians, but I might need a good transcriptionist.
I got a couple that I can give you to
try.
One is a little bit more than the other. The first one I've been using for, gosh, almost 10 years is Capital Typing.
Okay.
CapitalTyping.com.
Mm-hmm.
And you can email David over there, david@capitaltyping.com.
Okay.
And he'll set you up. The advantage is that they do a little bit of a better, more consistent job in terms of accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
The disadvantage is their standard turnaround time is 5 to 7 days. You can get it faster, but it costs more. It's about $1, a little bit over $1 per recorded minute.
Okay.
So better accuracy, higher price, and longer turnaround. The other one is a service called Rev, as in revolution, rev.com.
Mm-hmm.
And they are $1 per recorded minute. So it's a standard price, but here the good news is that's 24-hour turnaround.
Okay.
And the disadvantage is that I've used them about 10 times, and I would say about 2 out of those times the accuracy and the quality wasn't very good. In fact, one of those 2 times was so bad I had to send it back to them, but they fixed it. They gave it to another transcriptionist, didn't charge me for the fix, and it was great. So they made me whole.
Okay. Thank
you. So I've been using rev.com more lately because I need things a little faster. But just 2
okay.
others to kind of check out.
Okay, great. I'm a former journalist and super fast taking dictation, but you can't really focus as much as you can when you're just recording. So.
Yeah, and you may want to play with it, right? So if you're really good, see, I'm not, so I needed something. But if you're not, try recording it anyway. It can't hurt, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then decide after a couple of these if you think it would help. Many times the reason I also record and this is good stuff because I know this is going to help everybody. With when you're interviewing subject matter experts, a lot of times there's using technical language, not in terms of technology,
okay.
but just kind of lingo, industry jargon, and so forth. And it really helps to record it and to have it transcribed, because then you can cut and paste. Some of that actually becomes like raw content for me that I can use in my first draft.
Oh, cool. Okay. Great.
Yeah. Good luck. Keep us posted.
All right. I will, for sure. You bet. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Good stuff. So this is – I'm glad Sharon asked that question, the several big lessons there. But one is I'll keep repeating this throughout over the next few months. When you're starting out – when you're trying to really get out of that slump, you haven't, you've been struggling for a while, or you're just completely, you're brand new, right? So you're in these categories, man, be much more flexible. Be open to anything. Say yes to almost everything. You never know where it's going to lead. All right, I got a question here. I don't see a name or a number, but it's from Toronto. So if you raise your hand, you're in the Toronto area, you're on.
Hello?
Hey, who's this?
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. You sound great.
Okay, awesome. I wasn't too sure. My name is Tennille.
Hey, Tennille.
Hey, everyone. And I've now about a little over a year in my business. I've been writing B2C right now, and this is one of the reasons why I've crossed over and in this program to now go to B2B and get some companies underneath my belt. So my question
right.
is, how do I shift effortlessly from B2C to B2B and like hit the ground running?
Yeah, good question. So the first thing I would say is you need to start with your positioning, right?
Okay.
And how you're going to communicate that positioning. Have you gone through the first session yet?
I have, and I've come up with names that I could reach out to. But the thing is where I'm struggling is when I used to work in a full-time job, it was primarily nonprofit. And so most of my contacts work in the nonprofit, which I do not want to work with nonprofits because there's no money there. So finding an industry that I can – pitch to in terms of, okay, I have this experience with this field is proving to be difficult for myself because I know I can write and I know I can write well and I can write any subject with research,
okay.
obviously. But I feel like it's hard to pitch myself if I don't have previous experience in that industry. Because right now I only work with small businesses and entrepreneurs, so mostly coaches and consultants.
Okay. And so you write for them, and they're selling to individuals, right? So
right.
You're writing their copy. Okay.
Right.
All right. So it's a great question. Definitely a common dilemma out there. Here's what I would say. First of all, keep in mind that you don't have to narrow it down to an industry. So that is one way of defining a target market. The reason I don't like the word niche is because niche has become synonymous, at least in our little industry, with picking an industry.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one way to slice it, but there are many different ways. So I would think a little bit more broadly. If the industry where you have experience is not one you want to go after, then, okay, take it apart and figure out, okay, what is it about nonprofits? What is it about entrepreneurs and all these other groups or markets that you've had experience in? What do they have in common in terms of the things that I like?
Mm-hmm.
And then how can I kind of tie those together? And, okay. and communicate that, right? So I'll give you a couple of examples so you see what I mean, because I know that sounds very abstract. I think one example I gave was, and this is somebody actually doing this out there, she didn't want to target an industry. When she really thought about it, what came up over and over again was a skill set that she had. It wasn't so much an industry, wasn't like a group of people that much, even though it kind of was. It was... She's a ghostwriter, and she is very, very good at writing in the author's authentic voice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's one thing that's come up over and over again. Her clients say, "Oh my gosh, this is like me writing it. It's spooky." So, and she also noticed another pattern. She wrote mostly for CEOs and senior executives. So what she did, she combined those two and said her positioning is basically she ghostwrites thought leadership content, books, articles, white papers, et cetera, for senior executives who need to communicate in their authentic voice. Now, notice that didn't even mention an industry, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just what they have in common. Another example that I like to use is let's say that you have a technical background. Let's say you're an engineer and you have a master's in civil engineering, mechanical engineering, whatever. You're a very technical person. Anyway, you understand complex things, but you also have, I don't know, I'm just making this stuff up as I go, but let's say that you're also an amazing communicator. Like, you're one of those engineers who actually can relate to people and communicate to people really well, very powerfully and effectively. Your positioning could be, not that this would be copy, but your position could be, hey, I'm the engineer who can actually communicate ideas effectively or persuasively.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm the person you contact when you need to translate complex information into something a lay audience can grasp and understand and get behind on or behind with.
Okay.
Okay, so notice all those are different angles and different ways of slicing and dice it. So when an industry is not going to be right for you, take a look at where you've had experience, what you've liked about those experiences, and figure out, okay, what do they have in common? Maybe not all of them, but at least some of them. What do they have in common?
Okay, that's good. So for when I'm working in B2C, the thing that I focus on in my messaging, because I did struggle again there, like who I really wanted to work with, I would focus on translating their passion into words that their clients can get and understand them so they can buy from them. And mm-hmm. that did well for me because then I figured out what exactly I wanted to write. So email campaigns, landing pages, and articles. I enjoy doing that. So it was easier for me to determine what I like doing by just being broad, like you said. So now I need to translate that for the B2B market where I can, and that's where I get stuck.
Well, I wouldn't worry about what particular projects or services right now, because that's mm-hmm. taking it to yet another level of granularity.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you're not there yet. That will come. You will find the answers to what type of work specifically. I would keep it broad right now and say, I mean, you could say copy and marketing content.
Okay.
You know, so in terms of the what you do, keep it very broad. Whom you do it for? Also keep it fairly broad, but with the understanding it doesn't have to be an industry.
Okay. That makes it so
you could choose. You could say small businesses, you know, small to mid-sized businesses who need a writer to do, you know, blank, or who need blank.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I feel better about it now.
And the reason you want to keep it broad is, believe me, when you are in this situation, and many of you are, where, you know, it's just not, you're not sure yet, it's too risky to go too narrow at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Keep it broad, and then as you see where you're getting traction, then narrow it down little by little. So, example from my business, I started out by saying I'll write anything for anybody. Now, that was way too broad, okay? My next level, though, and this is when my business changed almost overnight, was when I said I write for high-tech companies. Now, that's an industry example, but here's my point. You know how many high-tech companies there are? I mean, we're talking millions. So in the grand scheme of things, I didn't really narrow it down that much. But I really did, because mm-hmm. just by saying that, then companies that identify themselves as, you know, technology companies, whether it was software, hardware, anything environmental, anything, I mean, when you think about technology, it could be just about anything, then that resonated with them. Then when they were thinking about, well, I got this generalist I could contact, or I got Ed, then it became more of a, well, I think we should pay more attention to Ed, everything else being equal.
Okay.
So even if you kind of draw the line in the sand that way and still keep it very broad, but at least now you've kind of narrowed it down somewhat,
mm-hmm.
then that's a great start.
All right. So my secondary question to that question is, how do I reach out to get prospects now if I'm broad and I don't really have an industry?
Then what you do is you start by categories. For instance, let's say when you're broad – and then five or six different industries could kind of fit that description,
mm-hmm.
then you start knocking on doors one industry at a time.
Okay.
And we're going to get to that. We're going to get to that. Right now, it's important. The reason we're doing it in this order, and I know some of you guys want to go, okay, well, how do I get clients? Like, I'm ready to go right now. Yeah, I get it. But the reason it's important to start here is if you're going to start knocking on doors – it would be a shame if you, after knocking on 50 doors, you finally got someone who's somewhat interested, and then they go to your site, and your site doesn't really communicate your value.
Mm.
So it's important that you start with, okay, how are you going to position yourself? Great. How are you going to communicate that positioning? Okay. How are you going to translate that message into web copy? That's the next step. And then, which is where we're going next, by the way. And then after that is, okay, let's start thinking about your – at that point, you can start thinking about your prospecting. Okay, what's going to be the plan of attack here?
Okay.
Because there's a ton of things you could do, how are we going to start? And then it's, okay, how do we actually knock on those doors? And then we're moving into, okay, great, I got a live one. They want to talk to me. I'm scared to death. What do I say in that conversation?
Okay. Sounds
so
good.
There's a method to the madness. we'll get there. But, yeah, just focus on that message for now, Tanil, and that's really the best thing you could do right now.
Okay. Okay, one more question, and then
sure.
I'll wrap it up. So it's a B2C question. I have a client right now, just finished a project for her. She loves what I've done for her, and now she's asking for a retainer, if I have any retainer fees. What is the ideal starting rate for retainer fees?
That is awesome. that she, I mean, is something you're interested in pursuing, I assume?
Yes.
Okay, so there's no, like, starting rate or anything like that. Here's the way I like to approach retainers. It's a little different from the way everybody else does it, but it's much more effective, I've found. Has she defined what she wants done? I mean, there's got to be a reason why she wants to put you on retainer.
Yeah, she has. She listed it out.
Okay. So the way I like to lead that conversation by saying, okay, let's say your name is Susan. Susan, first thing we need to do is figure out what you want done, okay, and help her come up with that list of deliverables, right? Let's say there's a monthly newsletter, and then there's this blog, and then there's, you know, these email campaigns, whatever. And sometimes it's hard for the client to determine that because they kind of want to play it by ear.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really hard to do this that way. It's much easier for everybody if they can scope out what they want done. And then also ask her, okay, in what time frame? Retainer agreements work best if they're at least 6 months in length.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, in the next 6 months, let's just take a six-month period, what do you want to get done? So sit down with her, help her figure that out, come up with a list. Okay, let's say there's 10 items. What you then do is you go back home and then you put it on a spreadsheet. I like to do a spreadsheet. And then you figure out what the fee would be for each of those 10 items regularly. If all you got was one of those, right? So no volume discount yet. Okay, you come up with a total, and then you give them some sort of discount.
Okay.
So let's just say I can't do math live on the phone, so let me just get my calculator. So let's just say that it's $10,000. I would consider giving her anywhere between 10 and 20% discount. You're not telling her this. This is just internally.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so 10,000. Let's just say 20% discount. That brings you down to 8,000, right? And you also know that the agreement or the period is going to be 6 months. So 8,000 divided by 6 is 1,333. And that's what you come up with. So you quote her. You never want to quote hourly with these agreements.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, I shouldn't say never. That's just not the ideal scenario because then they're buying hours. And there's a lot of problems with that. You're just quoting, look, here's what we'll do. We'll work together to get these 10 deliverables done over the next 6 months. And my fee would be $1,333. And then you sell the benefit. The benefit is I put you in the front of the line. You are now my number one client. You'll have the fastest turnaround. I'm there for you. You have me. You don't have to worry about, am I busy? You know, it's the velvet rope treatment. You're first in line always.
Hmm. Nice.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I love that. I'm glad I asked that question.
You know why it's great for you? Because you get that income predictability. You got $1,333 coming in every month.
Mm-hmm.
It's great for them because they don't have to guess. They know what the amount is every month for budgeting purposes. There's a clearly defined scope. And then to take the risk away, you tell them, hey, listen, every month or every quarter, however you want to do it, we'll look at this and just make sure that there's equity between the retainer and what we're getting done. So that way, it's cancelable anytime with a 30-day notice. That's the other thing I like to give the client.
Okay.
So if you give me 30-day notice, you know, this is always cancelable. 30 days just because I need 30 days to kind of fill this gap.
Mm-hmm.
And, take the risk away and then be flexible with them because, let's face it, those 10 items, that's going to change.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never been in a situation where they're giving me they named 10 and now they're trying to double that list. It's never been that way. Sometimes if they're starting to go in that direction, then tell them they have to swap.
Right.
Well, listen, you know, that's way out of scope now. Can we trade off some of the things that we had on the list?
So you have a set list, like the 10 items for that 6 months?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. It starts with that.
Okay. That's good. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, good luck. good luck. Let us know how that goes. It's be curious to hear.
All right, fabulous. I will.
All right, Tennille. Good talking to you.
Thanks, Ed.
You're welcome. All right, I see Crystal joined us. And Crystal, I don't know if you had an announcement to make. How are you?
I do. I'm good. Hi, everyone. Nice to meet you. You know, I'm the person behind the scenes. I had a couple questions come in about accessing the webinar, the webcast portion. And so I just wanted to just take a couple minutes and explain there was a little glitch. So I just wanted to jump in real quick, if you don't mind, Ed.
Okay. Yeah. No wonder, because I saw nobody was on the webinar and the webcast, and I thought that's weird. It usually is.
Yeah, and I saw tickets rolling in, and everything looked fine on my side, and I was giving you guys answers of where to go. You'd gotten the links and the reminders. Everything looked great, but there was a glitch. So even though you guys were going to the right place, it wasn't allowing you access. It was a tick box that shouldn't have been ticked. So I fixed it. So if you wanted to go ahead and jump on the webcast, you can do that now. Really sorry, everybody, for that problem. And it will be fixed for in the future so that doesn't happen. And just really quick, too, when we post the recording for today's call, what will happen is it'll be on that same page and it'll be the audio, so you can come back and access that anytime. And we'll let you know when that audio is posted.
So you just go to the same page and the recording replay will be there.
Absolutely, and we'll give you the direct link. But otherwise, when you log into the Smarter Freelancing portal or Smarter Freelancing Library and navigate to the B2B Biz Launcher program, which is what you're part of, you can do that by clicking on the navigation under programs at the top of the site, or on the dashboard, you'll see our logo, the B2B Biz Launcher 2.0 logo. When you click on that, what it does is it takes you to the student portal for the B2B Biz Launcher. There is all of the access information, all of the class information, all your materials, and you can navigate between all the weeks and all the calls in the left-hand menu there. And that's where you'll find all of the information week to week.
Cool. Crystal, one last question, because I said this, but I told everyone I was kind of guessing. If you can't make the call, but you want to pre-submit a question, I was letting them know that they can click on they can log into the Smarter Freelancing Library, go to B2B Business Launcher 2.0,
yep.
And then they can go click on the call for that day and submit the question there.
Absolutely.
Correct?
Absolutely.
How soon can they do that?
So I would recommend not doing it. So for our July call, don't do it right now, obviously. So if you do it within 2 weeks before the call, that's perfectly fine. And all the calls will be available ahead of time, and that little box will be available. But any beyond 2 weeks would make me nervous about saving that.
Yeah, no, and I think if you got a question, if it's too, I mean, I would just ask it in the forum, right? So
this
is really more like I was thinking the day before you realize, you know, I got a question and I'd like for him to address it in the call instead of the forum, but I can't be there, then that's when I would go. Anything longer than
perfectly
a day or two,
fine.
I think it's
right
best to just go to the forum and ask it there.
Absolutely. So, and if you have any questions, if you haven't been receiving the reminders or you're a little bit confused about how to navigate, I've gotten a couple questions about that, shoot me an email. I'm really, really busy today. I love supporting you guys, but I'll be going through all of that stuff tomorrow, and I can even shoot a couple quick screencasts if anybody needs it.
Okay, and that's support@b2blauncher.com.
That's correct.
Awesome. Thanks, Crystal.
You bet. I'm going to hop off the call.
Okay. Thanks. All right. So the next question is from, I don't have a name, but someone from Arlington, Texas, an Arlington, Texas number. You are on.
This is Robert. And I
Hey, Robert.
Me. Yes. Okay.
How are you doing?
Three questions. I'm doing good. I got three
Excellent.
Questions.
Okay.
First one is material for this week. And on page 10, you distinguish between copy or content, and I'm aiming myself at the at a specific high-tech market, and that's kind of confusing to me. How can you write particularly material for high-tech marketing that copy that doesn't have content. what does that
mean?
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up. It can be confusing. So when I say content, I mean marketing content. And to further describe that, I'm talking about educational content. Content that's educational but designed to market an idea or a product or a service. Okay, so
okay,
for instance, a white paper or a case study or an article would be considered marketing content, not copy. An ad, a lead generation email, a website for the company, a landing page trying to sell, a webinar or an offer. That would be copy.
Okay, and a video script for online video, I suppose, could be either, depending on how you looked at it. if it explains how a product works to some extent, then you would probably refer to it as content. But if it just talks about the features and benefits, it would be copy.
Yeah, that's kind of a gray area. Here's the litmus test I like to apply is it pure advertising?
Okay.
Right. So if it's a video that's more of a technical backgrounder, hey, let's get behind the scenes and let's look under the hood and see how this thing works.
Mm-hmm.
That could be either or. I typically think of that as marketing content because it's not straight out advertising. I look at that more as in the educational side.
Okay.
Right, and that would be a piece of content. And you also have to think about where it fits in the sales cycle. Something like that would fit more, like once a buyer is seriously considering that product or service.
Correct.
Right, so they're kind of deeper in the buying cycle, and they need more information because now their technical people are involved, and they have several questions they need answered.
Right.
In terms of compatibility and all that. So you're deeper in there, so it's more educational. But the thing about marketing content, it's always selling. It's just not overtly selling.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, that explains it. That makes sense to me. And then there was also a comment that you thought that we should focus on content to start with. I don't know. Didn't note the page where I saw that. Can you expand on that a little bit more?
Yeah. So the biggest opportunity and the easiest way to get in with a client is by offering to write any kind of marketing content as opposed to sales copy. And that's in B2B, by the way. So in business to business, it's just easier because it's there are several reasons for it. Number one, that's really where the demand is. When you look at how much writing they're doing, like how much writing and content and everything they're producing, written content, if you kind of shape it like a pyramid, it's really the top of the pyramid that's copy. It's really only that much. And then the rest is just marketing content. So, from a volume standpoint, your chances are higher of getting that project. Number two, the copy projects are a little bit riskier for a client to outsource to a freelancer because they feel that the freelancer would really need to understand a lot about their business, a lot about the product. It's a higher risk proposition. And many times it's an agency that's doing that for them or they'd rather do that internally. Those are easier projects to tackle internally. But have you ever worked in a corporate environment like a cubicle environment, Robert?
Oh yeah. I worked for
why do you say it like that?
Well, that's one of the reasons that I'm a freelancer. I worked for a household name high tech company for 10 years.
Yeah. So you know the environment, right? You're going from meeting to meeting to interruption to interruption. It's amazing these people get anything done. How can you possibly write an 8-page white paper in that environment? You can't.
Yeah.
You can't. Now, can you whip up a couple of emails promoting a webinar for the next couple of weeks? you probably can. So you see the difference? I can get that stuff done, but I can't possibly write that white paper.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't have the bandwidth, the focus time needed to do it.
Okay,
so,
well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, just to kind of tie it together then, so it's really the biggest opportunity because that's where the biggest pain is, that's where the most volume is, and it's lower risk. You're really doing them a service by you know, going after that. Now, once you're in the door, if you want to pursue those copywriting opportunities, so lead generation copy, email campaigns, then you can do that. But it's harder to get in the door with that.
Okay. Well, for me, that actually fits fairly well because I've done a lot of educational writing, writing for technical for people, highly technical people, to content to consume, what you would describe as marketing content. Okay, that's good. That was question number one. Question number two is I've been working for several months, so I've done my website, and which I will go over with all of your templates and questionnaires and whatever, but I actually have done a fair amount of work at developing a prospect list, and I'm aiming at a particular high-tech market, and I've qualified, let's see here, okay, so 350 companies domestic in the United States of under 500 employees and another 60 of 500 to 10 gazillion employees, and I guess my question is, do you think that's a big enough market to So call it the 400 companies all told domestically and another 150 internationally. Do you think that's big enough target market?
So there's two different things. You should make sure we're talking about the same thing. You're talking about that's the whole universe of potential prospects, or that's the list that you're kind of starting out with?
Well, it's a pretty accurate list. I've done a lot of research in terms of finding companies. So I'd say if I want to just focus on this niche, we're talking 400 companies in the U.S. and another 150 internationally.
It's hard to say without knowing more. The narrower the sector within an industry or target market that you're going after, typically the better, as long as it's a growth sector.
Oh,
I say typically the better. It's risky, but if you know a lot about it, you have a track record or a lot of experience there, and you know that it's growing, and they have a definite need for that educational marketing content we talked about, because what they're selling is innovative, expensive, and complex, all that bodes well.
Okay. All right. And then the last question, I don't know whether it's a question or suggestion, would be, at some point are we going to either give each other feedback about our websites, or have you give us feedback about our websites, or if you weren't playing that, I'll let you talk to it.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you brought it up. So it's not something I advertise when I promoted the program, but I am happy to give you guys feedback on your website. Now, there's some conditions to it, and it's through the forum. Okay, we've tried it different ways in the past, and it just hasn't worked. What's worked best is through the forum. So, don't email Crystal a bunch of documents or a link to your website. Things get lost that way. In the forum, we're going to go ahead. In fact, that reminds me to go ahead and set up a thread. Write myself a note, website, thread. All right, so here's what we're going to do. I'm going to start a website review thread.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just reply within that thread as a reply to my my post, and either give me your URL, which in this case you already have, or if all you have is a Word document because you haven't done anything, you haven't gotten there yet, this is for those of you who are there, then what you'll need to do is you'll need to post that Word document as a file in the forum and then just indicate in the website review thread that you've done so. So I'll look for it. Now, if in your case it's easy because you're giving me a URL, I'll see it, I'll go there, and I'll give you some comments and suggestions. In the case of a Word document, it takes a couple of steps because you have to tell me that you're posting it in the website review thread, and then you have to go to the file section. Up there in the top of the form, there's a navigation bar. Just go to files and upload it there. If you do it that way, please keep it in one Word document. I've had some people who send me, one day they'll send me the home page, and then 3 days later they'll send me the services page. That just gets to be, not only is it crazy because it gets lost, but I won't be able to give you proper feedback because I need to see it all together and see how it gels. Okay, so that's the only other condition. If when you do it, please give it to me once you feel good about it. So don't just throw something together and say, well, you know, can you give me a first cut? I will do one review for everyone who asked, but just one, and keep it all in one Word document. That just makes it better for everybody. And here's the other condition. Give me, you know, up to 3 or 4 days to get your feedback. Because what will happen is once we get into the website lesson next week, there will be several coming in all at the same time. So I will need some time to go through them. So just be patient with me. I will allocate time every day to go through those and get you guys feedback. But, you know, give me a little bit of time.
Okay. Well, that covers my questions. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome, Robert. Yeah. Make sure to post that. I'd be happy to do it. And, again, I'll set up that thread later today.
Great.
All right. All right, this next one is someone in Minnesota, 507 area code. You're on. Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, this is Michael Gibson. Can you hear me?
Yeah, is it, you said Mike?
Yeah, it's Michael Gibson, yes. In Newell,
hey, Michael.
Minnesota.
Welcome.
It's
How are you?
Oh, real good, thank you. As a total newbie to copywriting, and I've listened to what you've been saying about trying to keep your target market fairly broad, I'm almost a classic case of a master of not many businesses that I've been involved in, but I've done everything from like tax accounting and corporate accounting to actually teaching at a college to also my latest 10 years has been in the investment and insurance field, so I feel like probably my best source of knowledge is insurance and investments. And I'd already thought of a domain name that would be related to insurance. Would I be narrowing myself too much to just focus on insurance at this point?
So it depends. There's no right or wrong answer here, and this is why it's important to go through those four dimensions that I walk you through in session one, because that really gives you a better picture right there. The four dimensions were background, experience, track record, et cetera, in that particular industry or target market you're evaluating, in this case insurance. Second is, okay, what do your contacts there look like? Do you have a decent number of contacts, or is it, you know, gosh, this is 20 years ago, so I don't know anybody else there anymore?
It's in this current field, so I have all my contacts there.
Perfect. Then the next one is, okay, well, does that industry typically pay a decent, you know, decent rates? And this is hard for you to know for sure. But I can tell you that insurance, yeah, generally speaking, they pay relatively well. And then the litmus test there to know, if you're not sure, is, you know, are they typically, or at least some segments of the market you're looking at, produce or sell services and products that are innovative, expensive, and complex. Insurance definitely fits the mold. You know, there's some very complex insurance products out there. And then finally, it's kind of a soft category, but I think it's important to view, which is the, well, what do you think about the people and the topics and just kind of the businesses? And the example I like to give there, because that one is confusing to a lot of people, but the example I like to give, let's say you were an attorney and everything checks out in the other three categories, but when you get to that one, you tell me, oh my gosh, Ed, if I have to talk to another attorney or work at the law firm ever again, I'm going to shoot myself. Then, you know what, you need to pay attention to that. That's a problem. So just making sure that, look, you know, this is an industry that you at least kind of like and you're okay with the people and, you know, you'd be okay working in there. So based on that, I mean, how does insurance fit the mold?
It still comes out on top because it's the most recent thing that I've done for the last 10 years. I have the best contacts. Of course, I was always working with the end consumer, so I'm not quite sure how to approach it from a B2B standpoint. But I know that there's a lot that can be done in the insurance area.
Well, it's actually good that you're working with the end consumer because you understand the products and you understand the buying behavior and, like, you've been there in the trenches.
Yeah, I understand the frustrations of being an agent.
Exactly. So I think that's important. There's many angles you could take. One is, what about companies that sell to agents where that's kind of their primary contact? If you've been an agent, you've been one of them before.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah,
so that's another thing.
The other area that I'm very interested in is also related to insurance, but it's annuities. Because with most pensions going by the way for most people, whether they're in state government or even corporate pensions, more and more companies now are using annuities to actually fund their pension plans. And I'd be interested in approaching it from that standpoint too.
Great. Yeah. I would say that, I mean, at least right now from what you shared with me, this sounds like might be one of your best bets. I just, you know, just where I would draw the line is I wouldn't get much more specific than that. So leave it open. Don't say, oh, insurance, but only case studies or, you know, something like that. That's just, that's really now narrowing things down too much.
Okay. All right, that's great.
Be open to the possibilities and let's just see where it takes you.
Yeah. Now, should I mention any of my previous background, because I've had a long work career, and you know, I've been a tax accountant, a corporate accounting, I was even a financial analyst in the electronics industry, so I've got a lot of different things I've done. I've just, you know, just maybe not a master of all of them, that's for sure.
Well, what you could do is on your About Me page or bio page, then you can talk about that. So you still kind of lead with the insurance angle. And then when you talk about your work history and your experience, then you can mention, you know, I've also have deep expertise or experience or whatever in these other industries.
Right. Okay.
But that's better than saying, you know, my focus is insurance. Oh, and by the way, if you also need help in, you know, in X, Y, and Z, I can help you there. Oh, and also in, you know, C, D, and E. you don't want to do that. Just keep it focused and then kind of a footnote on your About Me page. That's the way to do that.
Okay. Sounds good. I guess the only other thing I was just wondering about, I guess in the next few weeks we'll be working on our websites.
Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, we're going to get to that. We're going to get to that next week.
Okay. And it sounds like that goes on for 2 or 3 weeks.
Well, I'm going to give you 2 weeks of implementation time after that. It's just been from, you know, feedback with other groups. Because even if you already have a website, just you'll find ways to refine it and adjust it. And for those of you who don't, you're going to need some time to get it up and running.
Okay. And you give us the technical aspects of how to do that?
Yeah, I'm going to give you – Crystal has put together a series of tutorials on that. We'll give you a couple of different ways you could go about it. Now, you know, where we kind of draw the line is we can't help support your website, right? So there are some things where you're going to need to get support from wherever you buy your website theme or template. If you go with WordPress or if you go with a website builder, they provide support. But we'll give you as much as possible, guide you in the right direction, and help you make a decision as to which way to go. And then we provide all kinds of tutorials. Okay, how do you get the content up on the website? You know, how do you update your website? How to create pages? That sort of thing.
Okay. Sounds good.
Awesome. All right. Thanks, Michael. Somebody had asked, how do you ask questions? How do you raise your hand? So star two on your telephone keypad raises your hand. I'll try to remember to you know, say that over and over again, because it'll take you guys a while to remember that. It's kind of a weird command, star two. But just keep that in mind. Anytime you could raise your hand. If you decide to unraise your hand, you can always do star two again. So, all right. Daniel out in Iceland, I believe. Right, Daniel?
That's correct. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. Hey, welcome.
Very good. Very good. I just have a question about positioning.
Okay.
I've already put up a website that really went nowhere because I just took one of my passions and tried to make a case for letting me write copy about that. However,
okay.
That didn't work because I didn't know what I was doing. Most of the material that I've gone over so far has been very helpful. And I've actually picked out another area that is also a passion. Living here, it's perhaps really not unusual to have a passion for being outdoors, this spectacular landscape, all kinds of geographical and really cultural, heritage connected with just about every stone in the country. It's got quite a long history, as some people may know. I think it was in the 8th century when people first came here, so it's been quite a bit different than having a 200 or so history where I grew up in Seattle, Washington. Never mind. I do like to be outside, and the area that I – or the market that I would – love to address is outdoor adventure companies.
Mm-hmm.
There are quite a few of those. And then I got to thinking, well, maybe, I'm not so sure, maybe I would just be writing for their websites because they really just deal with customers directly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that they're B2B at all. But in terms of outdoor technical equipment manufacturers, then I started thinking maybe that's more in the B2B line, and I would certainly be very interested in working with those people.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm asking about how broad, how narrow, and that's really the first question. What's your feeling, or do you want me to describe anything a little bit more since I've been doing some research on both?
Yeah, so give me first an example of what such a company would manufacture and or sell.
Well, for example, for people who like to rock climb, there is a lot of equipment that is life or death for them because of what they're doing. So I think it's gone in the direction of high tech. In many, many cases, it's not just a simple piton that you drive in to a place in the lava. It's it may be a belaying device that is very secure for helping people come up after you or to rappel down from where you are.
Mm-hmm.
Just one example. There are quite a few manufacturers in that kind of equipment. There's also quite a few people who have done highly technical equipment like Garmin. Are you familiar with that brand?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It also is the kind of equipment that is more and more connecting with software so that you can review data about what happened during your experience.
Okay. Gotcha.
Okay, so I think there's quite a bit of stuff there that I would be very interested in getting to know thoroughly and writing about. I could also be very interested in how they set up their websites. Some of them are pretty sophisticated and some of them are chaotic. So I don't think it's a very good user experience.
Well, it's so a couple of thoughts. One is as I'm thinking through the four filters or dimensions, definitely a passion there, right? So you have experience, knowledge, passion in that area. Any contacts? Do you know people in that industry?
Well, no, not at the moment.
Okay.
Of course, I know quite a few outdoor adventure companies that I've worked with here in Iceland. If we go back to that first thing that occurred to me, but as to whether I know anybody who's manufacturing this equipment, no, not at the moment.
Okay. No, that's fine. But this is the process I go through when kind of evaluating options. So very high on the first category, low on the second. The third is, do you have a sense for how much content and copy these companies are creating, and you know whether it looks like they may pay decent rates for it? I know that one is kind of hard to determine. But have you uncovered, you know, whether or not these companies are putting out quite a bit of marketing, educational marketing content?
I believe that in the case that sort of turned my attention to the outdoor technical equipment manufacturers, that they have published white papers. Now, if you ask me about details about whether they're whether I think that they would pay a lot for them, I think there's enough material there, so that must be the case, but I don't know for sure until I get into this more.
Sure. Okay. Well, the fact that they have white papers is a really good sign. Now, you want to make sure it's not just one company. So you want to make sure, for instance, it's not, you know, maybe 300 players in the industry, but only three big dogs, and those are the only ones really cranking out that kind of content, right?
Yeah, that's,
really
that's an excellent point. Thank you.
It's like I had someone I worked with. It was a similar situation. They were very interested in GoPro, but that was like that kind of market, right? The I forget what the category is called of cameras, but that's really the only big dog. That really limited her market. So keep that in mind. And the third or the fourth one would really be kind of the topics, and I'm assuming that you'd be very interested in writing about this stuff and working with these organizations. So what it feels like to me, I think it's worth digging a little deeper into this, but, you know, this is not one of those definite, like the insurance example earlier, yes, go for it. I think you need a little bit more research before making that final decision. I happen to know that with those types of industries, a lot of them tend to use marketing firms and ad agencies for a lot of this stuff. So one route to potentially explore is, can you find agencies that tend to have some of these enthusiast market clients? Because, you know, you may also want to kind of expand into, well, not just that, but it could be other and similar enthusiast markets, which might be interesting to you as well.
Okay. I suppose I might be looking into, for example, associations, marketing associations for these technical manufacturers.
See if you can find that exactly. So outdoor, and you'd have to do some digging around and searching to see what I'm sure every industry has associations. So find out what they are, get a sense for how many companies are in there. I would also do some searching in Google for ad agencies that have clients in these industries. Because there's nothing wrong with going after some of those agencies. You know, they're going to have the work. Most of them are not going to have staff writers, so they're hiring from the outside. That you'll typically be paid less than if you were working directly for the client. But if you get to work on projects that you really enjoy for clients that are amazing, you know, that might be a good trade-off for you.
I think that's a very good pointer. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, so check out the agency route as well. And, you know, that's not going to be – that's tedious work, right? You got to get on Google and start looking around agencies that have those enthusiast markets and see what you find.
Good. Also, I thought I'd mention that I think these companies almost certainly have newsletters.
Ah, there you go.
And actually, I've been writing 3 a week for, I don't know, the last 15 or 16 years. But it's not in this area. It's totally for business people.
Okay.
So I think that that would be an interesting point. I thought, but yeah, before saying that, I wanted to hear, you know, I never would have occurred to me to look for these agencies. So I'm very grateful.
Yeah, you bet. Yeah, definitely look in there before deciding yay or nay.
Can I move to a totally different topic, but related to this course, I think?
Sure. Yeah.
Since you've mentioned a couple of times we're going to be developing websites, my experience is entirely with WordPress, but I noticed that you use Infusionsoft.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, I don't know if you're one of them, also use, what is it, Aweber?
Okay, yeah.
You know, for what we're doing in the course, what would you? Maybe I should wait until next week or something. But I'm just kind of curious. How do you go about selecting? I just took WordPress because I was told that that was what I would need, but I'm not so convinced.
Yeah. So I think you should wait until next week, just because I'll give you. You really want the details to how to make the decision. And
yes.
And I'm going to walk you through that. But in a nutshell, WordPress, Infusionsoft, and Aweber, those are different categories of software or systems or platforms. So they're not synonymous. So WordPress is a content management or content CMS. Is it content management system? Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So WordPress is a platform for creating your website. Infusionsoft and Aweber are, you know, e-commerce, email management, as in like, you know, newsletters and email promotions, shopping cart, customer relationship management, right, contact management, that sort of thing. So you're not going to need that. You're just going to need a platform on which to build your website. And the options I'm going to give you, it's basically two. One is WordPress, and the other one is some sort of website builder, such as Squarespace, and there are a few others. And I'm going to show you what to think about, what to consider.
Okay, fine.
But if you, yeah, WordPress might be, you know, most people go with WordPress, but there are reasons to consider a website builder as well.
Okay. Well, that pretty much sums it up for me, at least this time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, Daniel. All right. I got someone. It's on Skype from, it looks to be a Bakersfield, California caller. You're on. Or 661 area code. Hello? Hello. All right, let me see if I can give you, just in case. So if you've raised your hand, just go ahead and say hello, just in case.
Hello.
Oh, there it is. Who is this?
Oh, hi there. It's I'm James. Hi, Ed. But I'm in the UK,
hey.
Actually, but I'm on Skype.
Ah, hey, James. So registered as Bakersfield, California, you know, which is so close to the UK.
I don't know how I managed that.
welcome.
So, So I've got a couple of questions. Hey to everyone. One is that I've chosen two or three areas that seem to offer good prospects in terms of my experience and connections, and also in terms of sort of potentially lucrative work. My challenge is that they are in no way connected. One is the energy industry and the services that feed into that, and the other is the health sector. So for the purposes of my positioning statement, should I simply exclude one initially?
You know, there's no right or wrong there because I've seen it done both ways.
Okay.
Where, let me ask you, in terms of your contacts and experience and background, is it more heavily weighed to one?
Absolutely. It's completely it's heavily weighted to the energy sector. The reason I chose the health sector is because I've got some bizarrely some good marketing contacts there, and I know that it's specifically there's interventional medicine products and sort of devices, which is really quite lucrative, and also I find it interesting. So I didn't want to exclude it, but I'm probably guessing that. That's something I could maybe introduce down the line. I'm just curious. I'm conscious that it could get really muddied if you sort of say, hey, I do energy. Oh, and I also do health.
It can, but here's the thing, and this is such a key point, guys. It's there are only two ways to get in the door with a client. That's it, only two ways. One is through your track record. Let's just call it track record. That encompasses experience, knowledge, et cetera. So your track record in that field or in that topic or whatever, or through a relationship. I mean, that's it, right? You can get in the door because you know someone or because of what you know and your experience. The best one is always relationships. I mean, if you don't have it, that's fine. Get in the door through something else, and there are ways to get there little by little. But if you have contacts in healthcare, then I think that's the sound reason to include it. And if you have contacts in energy because of your experience there over the past 12 years, then that's a reason to include it. There are many writers out there who have even three categories that are just as unrelated as the ones you're talking about. I know several writers.
Okay.
I don't know why this is like the trifecta, but this is they focus on technology, healthcare, and financial services.
Right.
And they do very well. It might seem like it's disparate and not make much sense, but it can work if you have the relationships. Because when you think about it, if you have the contacts, they're going to go to your website still to check you out, but that's not going to distract them. They're not going to say, ooh, I know Joseph recommended James to me, but he does energy too? Like, what's that about? I don't think we should contact him. You're still going to get the phone conversation, right?
Okay. Well, then the second part of this is, so my experience is purely as an energy journalist with a little bit of consulting. I've got 18 years of that. But my target area is corporate writing. So without any samples, do you think I should be positioning my positioning focus should be on transferable skills from journalism to writing marketing content, or should I actually wait and try and sort of conjure up some samples and then sort of talk about this is what I'm focusing on now?
So your experience is in energy, but as a journalist, you said?
Exactly, energy journalist. I mean, I'm working in a consultancy at the moment as their sort of information services manager. So, you know, it's still journalism, but it's sort of, you know, consulty sort of analysis as well. But that's very different from, you know, the marketing content that I'm looking at, which is white papers and also, you know, getting involved in some of the sales pages and stuff that you sort of talked about in your podcast.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry too much about it. Really, experience trumps samples. I mean, it'd be nice if you had some, but the sample problem is a very short-term problem. Once you get that first project, and, you know, let's face it, in your case, it's probably going to be through a relationship, suddenly that problem is not as big a problem as it was before.
But how do you represent yourself as the first? I mean, do I say I – because your examples, you either talk about – it's very much a sort of one or the other. and I'm, would I say I'm a journalist? You sort of now wanting to focus. I know I'm asking for specifics, but it just seems you sort of, you're one and you want to be the other. How do you represent that, or how's the best way to approach that?
I would say that you're, yeah, talk about the fact that you're a journalist. I mean, really, marketing content, so much of it is editorial, journalistic type,
right?
So
yeah.
I think you have an advantage there that you can leverage. And just talk about how you've been a journalist in the energy industry or field for X number of years. Because really what you have there, so many of the people with maybe a ton of writing samples or clips don't have, which is the insights, right, in the industry. Those insights,
okay,
that experience, that background is worth so much, because when you engage with a client, you already understand the background and the business drivers, because you've been writing about the industry.
Oh, that's a useful point. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay.
So don't
okay,
worry about the – yeah, it's not, oh, I'm a journalist, but I'm trying to – when you're a marketing writer, in a way, you are a journalist. You know, and a lot of the writing needs to have that same flavor and style. When you look at a white paper, yes, it promotes, but it has to come across as an objective business case.
Yes, yes.
And journalists are good at that.
Okay, that's really helpful. Thank you.
You're welcome. And journalists are great storytellers, James. So, you know, so much of marketing.
That.
Yeah, marketing content, the storytelling element is huge.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful, Ed.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, so you could go either way. Pick one or the other. I'd be more inclined to keep them both and then talk about your experience or insights background in each, even if it's more, if you emphasize it more in one than the other. Yeah.
Okay, great.
Sure. Good luck. It's you got some good problems to think about. That's that's better than having nothing. So, all right. So let's see. I have the next person. It says anonymous. I don't even have an area code or a city or a name or anything. So if you raised your hand earlier, just say hi.
Hi, Ed.
Hey.
How are you doing?
Good. Who's this?
This is David in Eugene, Oregon.
All right. Hey, David. Welcome.
Thank you. Don't know why it's coming up as anonymous. I'm actually not trying to mask my identity in any way here.
Nah, the system's a little weird. Sometimes it does that. I know it's not you. It's look at James. He's in the UK, and it said California.
Right. By way of Bakersfield.
Yeah.
In any case, my question it's somewhat similar to the gentleman who had his background in the insurance industry, in that I've been doing the exercises and kind of looking for my ideal target market, and my experience, my work experience, is primarily as a chef. I've had about 20 years in the hospitality and culinary industries in a number of different sectors. And the area I've kind of been focusing in on as a niche or a target market would be the restaurant equipment supply industry, some of the higher-end equipment suppliers. So I've been researching websites and that sort of thing, and what I've noticed is it seems to be a large market, but where I'm kind of torn is that the type of materials that they're looking for, I'm having a tough time determining if the content that they're looking for is really kind of the content that I feel best equipped to be providing or most interested in writing. And I don't want to, get into the trying to focus too much on a style of writing rather than a target market right now. But, my writing style has very much kind of lends itself maybe to more of the social media stuff, blogs, newsletters, marketing content of that sort. And, I've been looking at these websites, and I see some of them have blogs, some have newsletters available, that kind of thing. but I don't see a lot of that. But again, I'm only looking at websites at this point. And so what I'm curious is, you know, are there other ways to find out kind of what sort of other marketing materials these industries, you know, employ, like white papers and that case studies, that sort of thing, or if I'm kind of, you know, barking up the wrong tree?
Well, typically you can find through their website, because most of the time they're going to have that posted, whether or not they make it available to you freely or you have to request it or something like that. So, what I'm hearing is you haven't really found that by perusing their websites?
Yeah, not a lot. I mean, I found like some product description pages, and that's about as deep as it goes. And even those tend to be pretty cut and dry, a lot of, you know, straight ahead statistics and not really a lot of what I would call marketing content.
Yeah. So, and I'm not surprised, because my impression of that kind of equipment is there's only so many manufacturers, right? And so if you're a restaurant, you're going to need X number of, you know, these items, these pieces of equipment. And for each, you probably have a choice between 1 to 3. And I might be way off, but it's not, there's not a lot of innovation there, right? So where a lot of marketing content is needed is when somebody has created a process, a service, or a piece of equipment that it's a very different view of tackling a problem, right? So it's like, it's innovative. It's, you know, you've been using this, I don't know anything about a commercial kitchen, but you've been using this piece of equipment to do X. Well, you don't even need that piece of equipment. You know, if you change this process or you change this, you can skip all that. We help you develop the workaround, or we, right? So it's a very different way of thinking or approaching a problem. And those people are going to need white papers and case studies and all kinds of marketing content, because they're trying to change the way people think about it, right? So it might be, and what I'm hearing too from you, David, is that wouldn't necessarily be what's most attractive to you in terms of the type of writing. You seem to really enjoy the more livelier writing, blog posts, newsletters, social media, that sort of thing. Did I get that right?
Yeah, and that's very much in line with the writing I've done in the past. I ran a writing business for about 6 years, close to a decade ago, that I did a lot of different stuff, but it was much more in the creative aspect of it. I did things like business plans, but I also did things like I wrote for a toy company doing interactive dialogue for robots. So I have a lot of experience like writing in character. When you talked about the woman who had kind of built a market around, you know, being able to write in other people's voices, that's kind of something that I, you know, could see myself doing as well, in terms of I'm able to take on a, you know, a voice and do a lot of work in that particular medium.
Gotcha. One idea, this is just like as I'm hearing you say this, it comes to mind, is what about restaurants and other similar hospitality type businesses that really need to communicate a specific message or tell a story, right? Because when I think of a top restaurant, it's not about facts. It's not about we're open, you know, Monday through Friday from this time to this time, and here's our menu, and here's our, you know, here's where we are. What are you about? It's communicating that feeling, that story, right? And you're selling an image, right? And if you've worked in restaurants, if you've been a chef, I mean, you might have a flair for communicating that. That could be really fun work. I know where it was. The best example I've seen of this is a restaurant I went to in Norfolk, Virginia last year. And you know what? If I find it, David, I'll post it on the forum. But whoever wrote this website did an amazing job. I really felt – so I was at a conference. I was one of the speakers. They were going to take us there, and I looked up the restaurant. And as I read the copy, I thought, this is brilliant. I mean, I already feel like I'm there. That's a very special skill. I don't have that skill. I can't do that kind of writing very well. But if you have that gift, then that gives you a huge advantage. Not every restaurant's going to want that, but many higher-end restaurants are going to want that kind of – you need to show the personality of the restaurant, the staff, the chef, right? So now where else can you take that? You can take that to social media, other communications such as the restaurant's newsletter. And again, I'm not just talking about restaurants. I'm talking about hospitality in general. I mean, how does that sound? Do you think that could be something that you'd be interested in?
Oh, I think so very much. And I mean, when I first approached this, you know, I was looking at the entire kind of culinary hospitality industry. I've also worked in the travel industry on the hospitality end of it. And, you know, and as I was narrowing, and that's why this process that you put us through and you know, some of the AWAI information too has been useful, but also, you know, you can go down the wrong road. The reason I think I wound up with equipment, you know, with high-end equipment supplies, I was trying to meet some of those criteria about, you know, who would be making these purchasing decisions. Is this going to be a committee-type decision? So is it going to be the type of thing where they need additional, you know, ancillary marketing materials because you're selling a high-end item that's going to require more of a marketing push? It's not an impulse purchase or anything. But
yeah,
there are certainly other – yeah, there's certainly other factions of the hospitality industry that, you know, that my personality and writing style might be better suited towards.
Yeah. Yeah, you need to give that some thought. I think it's you looked in the right direction, but what's missing there is the element of how much writing are these companies doing. In terms of the kind of writing that you need to do, right? The marketing content and copy.
Right.
I think that's the part that's missing.
Well, it helps in going through this process sometimes to just articulate some of this, you know, rather than it all being in my head and on paper and stuff. So it does help kind of think through it. And again, you know, part of the reason I aimed myself in that direction, I thought, well, hey, I've bought high-end equipment. I've been on the buyer's end of that. So that gives me something of a perspective on, you know, what people are going to be looking for. What are some of the selling points that are going to make something interesting? And mm-hmm. And there actually are a lot of manufacturers out there. It's a fairly large industry. You know, they're having their largest yearly trade show next month in Chicago, and there's over 3,000, you know, companies represented there. But that being said, some of the points that you brought up about, you know, how many different ways are there to, you know, to build a combi oven? How many different ways are there to make an ice cream maker? You know, they're all kind of selling on the same points.
Yeah, that's why what you find in terms of marketing is a sales sheet, which is really features and benefits, and that's it. I mean, I'm not saying you couldn't make a living doing that. I'm just saying there's not enough volume of that kind of content to maybe kind of get going, and it could take you a lot longer to get traction in that with that particular target market than it would with a similar target market that's got a lot more of it.
Right.
You know,
no, that makes sense.
By the way, that restaurant, it just came to me, Stove. It's called Stove. StoveRestaurant.com. Check it out. And this may be way off, by the way, David, in terms of what you were thinking or what kind of writing you've done before, but I rarely come across that kind of writing that really depicts the personality of the chef and the restaurant itself.
I'll definitely check it out.
Cool. Was this helpful?
Yes, very much so. Thank you.
Okay, sure. And, you know, as you're thinking more through it, let me know. And then the forum, if you have any other ideas you want to talk through, let's go through them.
I absolutely will. Thank you.
All right. All right. I have Daniel here not too far from me in Macon, Georgia. Hey, Daniel.
Hi, Ed. Actually, I'm in Fort Worth, Texas. I got my phone in Macon a few years ago.
man, I like the last three have been way off, so Well, I'm glad you recognized when I called you.
That's all right. Okay, so I have a few questions.
Okay.
First, I have a client who's interested in a white paper, but it would be my first white paper. Second, he has to pay out of pocket. Like, he's an insurance broker, so he'd have to pay out of pocket. His company won't cover it. So what's a good range? What can I say to him?
A good price range for a white paper?
Yeah, they have to pay out of pocket. It's my first one.
Oh, you have to pay for it. Who's writing it?
I am. He's paying out of pocket for it. His company won't cover it.
Gotcha. And what type of business is it?
It's insurance.
Okay. Really, the range for white papers is kind of all over the place. So the top tier writers are charging anywhere between $5,000 and $8,000. But you know, you can get started depending on the length and the scope and all that for as little as, you know, $1,500, $2,000. So here's the thing: you're getting started. You're trying to. The most important thing right now is not cash flow. The most important thing is to get some traction, right? To get some momentum.
Yeah.
So if I came across an opportunity, somebody's paying out of pocket, that means, hey, the budget's going to be a serious issue. But guess what? I need some experience. I need a sample. I would be willing to trade off fee for the opportunity. So I would throw a number. You have any idea what he's thinking in terms of budget?
Yeah, we're going to have a phone call next Tuesday morning to go over a little more and see what his budget is.
Has he or she defined what they want the white paper to be about or what to do?
Not yet, but he kind of wants to go over that Tuesday morning.
Okay. Most white papers, it depends. There's three kind of basic categories. The problem solution tends to be the most common one. It's also the one that's a little harder. It really is the hardest one to write. And most of them are between 5 and 10 pages. So when I quoted those ranges, I'm really talking about that kind of piece. I would do? I would ask him. Don't you start. Ask him. Is it a him or her?
It's a him.
Okay. Ask him what budget he's working with. Hey Bill, listen. Okay. I'm willing to work with you, but I have no idea where what your budget is. What's your budget for this? What can you afford? And if someone you know, hopefully they'll give you a range, and they might try to kick it back to you. Well, shoot, Daniel, I really don't know. I mean, what do you think this would be worth? And then throw it back at them. I said, well, it depends. I mean, that's when I usually put out a range. So look, typically, for a white paper, you're looking at anywhere between $2,000 and $5,000, and just get a reaction, right? And let's say he says, "Oh my gosh, you know, I can't do anything like that." Then you ask him, "Okay, well, what can you afford to pay? What did you have in mind?" Right. So now you're just playing that game where you're going back and forth. You're asking him; he didn't reveal. So then he threw it back at you. Then you said, "Well," then you gave him a range of what it typically costs. He freaked out. Okay, well, then you tell me. What did you have in mind? Well, shoot, I was thinking, you know, no more than $1,000. And then you could say, well, you could accept it, but if you accept it, just make sure you qualify it and say, well, Bill, here's the thing. It's way below the market rate for this type of project. However, I'm looking to get started. I know I could do a bang-up job for you, but I could use a couple of samples to get going. I'm willing to do it for $1,000 under the following conditions. First, that you allow me to use it as a sample. Number two, that if you really are happy with the way it turned out, that you agree to give me a testimonial. And I could even help you write it or whatever, so don't worry about that. But, would that work? And, again, we're thinking hypothetically here, but say, oh, yeah, that'd be fine. That'd be fine. I could work with that. Great. You got yourself a deal. Here's the bottom line, Daniel. I'd be willing to do that project for free if I had to. But what you're trying to find out is, you know, can you get something for it? For two reasons. Yeah. Not only do you obviously want to make a little bit of money, but secondly, you're going to have a much more serious client, and they're going to be easier to work with if they had to pay. Because if they have to pay, they're going to treat it more seriously.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, great.
Hey, I'm losing you. You're breaking up. Hello? I think I lost him. Daniel, sorry. It looks like I was kind of losing you there at the end, but hopefully that answered your question. Okay, guys, so I keep forgetting to remind you, star 2 raises your hand if you have a question. Star 2 on your telephone keypad. And let me make sure that so Ryan in the webcast says, I pressed star 2, but I'm not sure if my hand is raised because I press it again. Okay, if you press it once and you press it again, it actually lowers your hand, so I can't see you. So star 2, just press it once. I might not get to you immediately because I'm answering other questions, but just keep in mind that once you do star 2, just leave it there. It will keep your hand raised here on my dashboard, and I'll see it. So, Ryan, I don't know where you are. If you're still on, there we go. All right, I think this might be, I don't know if this is you. It's a 909 area code. Hello?
Yes, hello.
Hey.
Hello?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, great. I don't know if
it's Ryan?
Starbucks. Yeah, this is Ryan.
Oh, okay. I was just going to say, man, turn the radio down.
Is it too loud? I can walk outside. Is it too
no, now funny? It's now it's fine.
Okay. I'm in a Starbucks. That's why I'm not.
Okay.
Okay, cool. Well, I just had a few questions here. Well, I've been working on my website for a while, like a month, and I don't have money to outsource that, so I've kind of been doing that, but now I'm going back to focusing on writing samples and project samples for my website. So I'm just trying to figure out, I don't have a whole lot of time, so what are the most useful project samples that I can work on right now that will give me some credibility, because I'm really new at all of this.
What type of writing do you want to do? Have you identified what types of projects you'd like to do?
Well, so far I actually completed a case study, and I posted that yesterday. So I've done that, and I've done some web copy projects for some friends, and so I'm focusing on B2B writing. I have experience in healthcare, so I want to focus on B2B writing for healthcare, and I don't really have a specific target for projects, but I think case studies, I think I want to target that for a bit. But I've already done one sample of that. So
okay.
I'm just trying to figure out what are the best samples that I could post and start working on, you know, just to make my portfolio look a little bit more varied.
Yeah. So Ryan, now it's actually getting pretty loud. I'm sorry.
Okay, let me move
on. Let me do this. Let me mute you, and I'll answer, and I'll bring you back on. So you're muted right now. Here's what I would do. I would, rather than trying to pinpoint exactly, okay, now I need a white paper and now I need a website, I would actually go by I would approach my network. He says you already said you maybe wrote a couple of websites for some friends. See if those same people or other people you know could use some help, maybe with something else, an article, a short article, a white paper, a short white paper, anything else, right? Either go back to the same people or other people, and you might suggest some things, but if they don't need that, see what they could use help with. And go by that rather than, okay, now I need this and I need that. because you want to go with whatever's easiest and whatever will get you the samples faster. And if you can go to your network, that's usually the easiest place to get that, to get those samples. So that's the way I would approach it and see what comes up. The one thing I would probably try to stay away from is a website, just because a website requires a little bit more on the client side. So, you know, if you offer to do a website for, let's say, free, write the web copy. If their business is not even up and running yet, or their website's not even up and running, it could take several months for them to make that website live. And then you're waiting months. You've already done the work, and you don't have a sample yet, right? Because the only way a website's really a good sample if it's live already. So the website would be the one that I would try to stay away from in terms of doing some work for free or for very little in order to get a sample. But everything else, I would say, is fair game. It's okay to come into the request with some ideas, but if they don't need the things that you're offering, ask them what they could use some help with. Anyway, let me unmute you again. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. I actually experienced that. I did web copy for a church, and they have not yet done anything with it. It's been a few weeks, so, and it's only been a few weeks, but yeah, there is a delay there. I'm not even sure they're going to put it up anytime soon.
Yeah, and that's tough. I mean, I get it. It's a lot of work to get it done. They may not have someone right now, so, but you need samples, so you want to go with someone who's ready to roll.
And also, too, I'm actually doing samples just on spec. I don't have a client list right now that I can target and ask for projects. So I'm just doing some stuff on making up, but I guess when is it enough? When is my portfolio good enough to start focusing more efforts on marketing again and prospecting? Because I don't have a whole lot of time to do both, or it'll just be a little bit of each every day. But I guess when is it enough for the portfolio?
Two to three samples is enough. Yeah,
okay.
Two to three samples, you're good to go. You don't need to do any more spec work after that.
Okay. Oh, well, I got that. So I guess I could just start moving on then.
Yeah, and you do. I know there's always going to be the issue of, yeah, but am I really ready? I'm kind of worried. Here's the thing. You're not looking for someone. Right now, I think I mentioned in the forum, you're looking for a client who's willing to hire you based on what they see today. You know, if they need much more experience, samples, track record, they're just not a good client for you right now, and that's okay. Just like when you get out of school, you're not looking for an employer who needs 10 years of sales experience in their candidate. If that's what they're looking for, you have zero sales, then you're not it. But if someone is willing to see that, hey, you have nothing, but they're willing to work with you for whatever reason, then that's who you want.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually got that advice from the podcast too, so I'm going to start focusing on just who will hire me now from where I'm at.
Yeah, there you go.
So I do have another question. I'm taking a little bit of a shift, but I recently got an article accepted for a trade magazine for my industry. I work in healthcare. And I put this question in the forum, but how do I leverage that upcoming exposure? They're going to publish it in June, and I just want to use that opportunity to really target some leads and just make the most use out of it as I can right now, because I'm still starting out. So
okay.
Do you have any ideas about how I can leverage that?
Yeah, there's several ways you could leverage it. One is I would link to it on your website. A natural place to do that would be in your About page, where you're talking about yourself and your experience and your background in healthcare. Your insights have been published in, XYZ magazine, and then right there, hyperlink that to the article. Another one would be when you're prospecting for clients. Include a link to that article. It adds credibility. When you're following up with clients or with prospects, include that link. Hey, Bill, I haven't heard back from you, but in the meantime, I wanted to let you know I want to send you a link to an article I wrote that was published in XYZ Magazine. It's a great excuse to follow up. I mean, those are probably the best ones to use, right? Oh, social media, right? So link to it. Hopefully you're connecting with some potential prospects and LinkedIn. Go ahead and not don't abuse it, but, you know, maybe once a week, twice a week, link to that article. Just say, you know, just my article on whatever just got published in XYZ Magazine. Here's a link to it. So that's another mm-hmm. great way of doing it.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, you can get a lot of mileage out of that, and it doesn't have a shelf life. You could continue mm-hmm. to use that and link to it.
Yeah, great. Another question I had, it's not kind of shifting again.
Okay.
I'm using a pseudonym for my writing business, but not using my legal name. And I just
okay.
don't know if you know people who have done similar things with their business. And is it more of a headache than a benefit? Or does it cause problems down the line to do it that way?
I haven't known anyone who's done it long term. Let me ask you, what's the reason for it? Is it because of your employer, or is it privacy, or why are you using that?
I guess it's both. I just want to keep that part of my, I guess just privacy mainly is the issue. I'd like to keep my personal name off of social media and off of the internet as much as I can, and just keep my private life separate. That's the main reason.
So, I mean, and look, this is, you're going to get all kinds of opinions on this, right? So it is what it is. It's just an opinion. If it's that, I don't know. My advice would be to not worry too much about that. Look, we don't live in a private world anymore. Whether you're on social media or not, we have no privacy, you know. So it's just a tough reality. But I think it's going to hurt you more than anything. It's just really hard to not put yourself out there and just to kind of, like, keep this other persona out there in its place as a proxy. Mm-hmm. So it's just difficult to do a good job marketing, because at the end of the day, people are buying you. And if it's not really you, quote-unquote, it just becomes difficult. It becomes odd. I considered it, by the way, so I hear you. I considered it. My reason was more for my employer. I didn't want to go out of my way to let my employer know that I was doing this on the side while I still had my day job. But it just, as I thought more about the specifics and the logistics of making it work, it just seemed like a total pain. And that was really before social media, right? This is like 2003, 2004. Now, today, with social media, it would have been even harder. Because, you know, on LinkedIn even, it would just be kind of a real problem. So I'm not saying don't do it. I'm just saying I think there's more disadvantages to using a pseudonym than there are advantages. But, you know, you don't have to get into the personal reasons. If your reasons are personal and very strong, then that's cool. You can make it work. But so I don't know if that's really an answer. Just wanted to give you my thoughts.
Yeah, yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you. It is kind of people have different opinions on it, and I haven't found a definitive answer for myself. But appreciate your thoughts on that.
Sure.
I just have one more question. It wouldn't take too long. I wonder if healthcare and medical and alternative health are similar enough to target both on my website. If that would be pretty close to each other.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, in fact, they're even closer than the example with James earlier, energy and healthcare. So those are, I think they go well together. Yeah, especially since you're in the industry anyway, right? So you can speak to, if you can speak to all of them, then I think it's great.
Okay, that sounds great. Well, I appreciate your help and your thoughts. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome, Ryan. All right, guys, so we have time for maybe one or two more, and I see that Daniel is back. So I'm going to bring him on. And, again, if you have – after Daniel, I have time for one more, and it's star two, and your telephone keypad if you want to raise your hand. Hold on a second. Let me just make sure that yeah, Liz, if you start two, then you must have hit it again because I don't see your hand raise. Sorry about that. Try it again, Liz. Let me see if I see a Tampa number. 813. Oh, I see you there. Okay. All right, let me go to Daniel, and then I'll come to you, and then we'll wrap up. Hey, Daniel, you're back.
Hey, sorry about that. I don't know why, but the Wi-Fi failed, so my call failed.
Yeah, it's coming through a little distorted. So, yeah, it's you just kind of dropped earlier.
Yeah, that's odd. Okay, so get back to my questions. My next question is, I potentially have a, to use the colloquialism, a big fist on the hook. Mm-hmm. But to make it work, you must have a graphic designer, and I have to bring the graphic designer with me. Do you have any advice for finding someone I can trust and that I can meet with me and say, I potentially have this big project, come with me?
You know, the only way to really do that right is to develop those relationships and then, you know, meet with them either virtually on the phone or in person and do it that way, or get a recommendation from a fellow freelancer.
Okay.
We have a designer that works with us, but she does it very part time. She's not taking any clients, so I can't really recommend her.
Yeah.
I would just ask around. In fact, I would put the question in the forum and see if anyone out there works with a graphic designer that they know and trust and does good work.
Okay.
See if you get some good recommendations.
Okay, I'll do that. Thank you.
Yeah, and it's good to have – this goes for everybody. It's good to have those relationships, guys. So it's good. Yeah. You know, that's why like in Atlanta we have the Freelancers Forum, so it's a group of freelancers. And obviously you're not going to get clients there by going to the meetings, but one of the things you can do is to network with fellow professionals, including some designers, and that way when you have the opportunity, then you can go in on a project together because you've already developed those relationships. So it's good to network with other freelancers.
Okay, great. And my next question is, you may have talked a little bit about this earlier, but I've been having phone calls, so my phone has been cut off, but I want to reach out to medical clinics around me, and I found a list of like 60 or 70. What's a good way to research good marketing materials to pitch them? Because my dad's father is a doctor, and I have some experience in that, but I just don't know how to figure out the best way to pitch some marketing materials, because I just don't want to throw everything against the wall and hope something sticks.
Daniel, I'm sorry, buddy. You're coming across very distorted. I heard something about you researched 60, but I didn't really understand what they were. 60 what types of companies?
I'm trying to reach out to like 60 medical clinics.
Okay.
Around the area. But I'm not sure, like, how to research good marketing materials to pitch them, because I don't want to just pitch them everything and hope something sticks.
Well, so the way – we're going to get into prospecting soon, but in an upcoming session. You don't want to approach a prospect and pitch them something. What you want to do is you want to approach a prospect and see, and explain to what you do, whom you serve, and just inquire if they, for instance, use any outside writers occasionally, and if they do, what it would take to be considered. So you're fishing for a potential need, not, hey, I want to write a white paper for you, for instance.
Yeah.
So it's really approaching it differently, and let them know that you came across them, that you see that they're already doing this type of writing, that they have this, that, and the other. It looks really good. You're curious if they ever work with outside writers.